Welcome to the Meat and Poultry Podcast. This podcast is your online portal to hear from experts in the industry about the latest news, trends, technologies, and people in the world of meat and poultry processing.
For the Meat Poultry Podcast, I'm Ryan McCarthy, Digital Media Editor. True Story Foods in Northern California is all about taking their experience in the meat industry and applying it to the next generation of small American family farms. Bill Gatto, Chief Executive Officer of True Story, recently joined the Meat Poultry Podcast to share some of his history of the company, along with his family's background of breaking into the industry. We discuss some of True Story Foods' products and how it competes against the rest of the organic meat market. We also go through how Gatto finds the correct product and sourcing to meet the standards set by the company. He talks extensively about one of his business partners, Russ Kramer, who oversees True Story's Heritage Breed Program in Missouri. Later on, Phil takes us through how they maintain relationships with customers and suppliers to achieve the success of his business. But to start the conversation, we ask about Phil's experiences in the industry, from being president of Columbus Craft Meats to his early childhood. We hope you enjoy this conversation with Phil Gatto.
Going back to if you started with Columbus and that's kind of how this came about, how did that experience help you establish what you wanted to do at True Story?
I guess if you go back, there was three families who bought a salami factory, and all three of the men were in their 40s, and that was in 1957. I was like 10 years old. My father and uncle and a cousin were the three of the partners. 10 years old, you sort of start hanging with your father. And hey, what's cool for him is cool for you. And so they sort of started a brand new venture. Before that, my father and uncle were bartenders. And the other fellow was a house painter. So they had to go in. There was like 13 salami factories in the Bay Area. And at that time there, the way to differentiate yourself was to understand the business and to make great products. And so when you come from that kind of a background from the ground up, I think you have an appreciation for the business that's over and above what you get in school.
Right.
And through that 1957 to today, you know, it's 65 years. The industry has changed tremendously in 65 years, and the journey is still going on. If anything, myself and my partners, I'm second generation, my son's third, my partner's third, his son is fourth, his son is fifth. And a lot of people we work with came in either to the Columbus system, many of them, and learned from the ground up. And that's been over 20 years. So there's a good insight into where we came from and where we are and where we want to be.
And what led you to make the decision in 2011 to kind of move into this now and realizing that this was the right step for you to do with your business?
I think we took a look when I went to work in 1970, there wasn't a lot of consolidation. There was a lot of family farms and small businesses like ours in San Francisco. We've seen a lot of consolidation over the years. Then you always try to differentiate yourself. Probably when I was at Columbus, when I left in 06, was the beginning of Whole Foods, the natural, organic, natural environment for food was becoming, there was more awareness to it. And that was kind of the direction we were doing at Columbus. And when I moved on, we sort of took and said, that's the differentiation. And let's follow that path. When I say that differentiation, it was not only in the meat, because I think a lot of that organic and natural NAE meat was really what existed in 1970 when I went to work. And the industry has changed tremendously since then. So a group of us said, hey, we think we can differentiate ourselves here between the quality of the meat we purchase and the quality of the products that we produce, and consumers are asking where their food came from, and they want to understand. So that's sort of been our vision, our mission, to bring better food to the marketplace and to create a community of people that bring that product to market.
For you, having so many more, you know, all natural organic competitors now or players in the industry, what do you guys do to try to separate yourself in that space a lot of time?
I see there's a lot of people in it. But we have a full program. So we have all four proteins. I think that's a key differentiator.
For you, Phil, and from what you've seen, what constitutes kind of a great meat product for you to look at? What are the qualities that you look at when it's getting from producer to processor and all those steps?
First, I think you got to get a great raw material. And then the industry, I think over the last 50 years, has had a lot of great technology. I think you got to take that technology and blend it with some artisanship in order to get a piece of meat that it's got a good bite. It's got some tenderness. It's a good experience. Not just the least expensive. I think when people start to realize that when they eat a lot of our products, it tastes different than a lot of the products in the marketplace, they appreciate it. And that just sort of drives us to continue doing what we're doing.
Phil, I just wanted you to take me through a little bit of the basics of your company. Kind of what's the size you're looking at? How many employees? Like what's kind of some of the basic parameters of what you guys are working with?
You know, we have a group that's there's probably 150 or so employees. They range from people who actually are connected to some farms and sourcing that into the plant, where there's a lot of history and tradition of making what we would consider good quality, in a lot of respects, artisan product. And then a great sales team. But we always try to stay connected in the community. At the end of the day, we look at ourselves as consumers. And a lot of times, even here when we test our eat or products or test them, it's like anytime you can sit around a table and enjoy good food, which means we're in the food business. We're just not in the meat business. There's a lot of other components that our meats are blended with, whether it's bread or an entree. We're in the food business, and that community that brings everybody together, we enjoy and kind of inspires us. And when you get inspired, there's a certain amount of passion that comes with that to always do it better. I think we're not perfect, but there's a lot of that spirit around here of people who love food and appreciate what it takes to bring it to the table.
Sure. And you mentioned that you guys source for all four different types of meats. How many places do you guys source throughout the country to get that product to where you want it?
We've got a lot of small farmers. Whatever, there's independent farmers and co-ops is primarily where our meat come from.
Okay. And one of them in particular that I saw was working with Missouri Ozark pigs. And take me through a little bit about finding that heritage breed program and working with Russ Kramer and how important that's been to what you guys have always wanted with your pork products particularly.
That probably started 25 years ago. And where that started was when we looked at natural food stores. And then the natural food stores are independents. Then Whole Foods was probably the first of the larger specialty natural food stores. We were dealing with them and there was demand. So in order to start to build a business plan with Whole Foods, we looked at where they were sourcing their meat for the meat department. That sort of brought us to a variety of farmers in the Midwest. And just by the sake of chance, we ended up with Russ Kramer, who was in charge of a co-op. He had, at his co-op, they were in Missouri. part of the reason for Missouri is it's a great environment to raise natural animals. It's a little bit more expensive to breed the feed down there, but he grew up raising hogs. He's a geneticist. He understands quality. And he was just kind of, and still continues to be a tremendous resource for all of us.
Phil, how do you go about trying to add any family farms to become part of your network of what you guys are trying to source? How does that go about for when you guys are looking at that?
We've been lucky to a large extent because of our reputation in the marketplace. There's a lot of people that contact us. That would be first. And then after they contact us, then we kind of go through what the protocols are. Once we kind of establish that, sometimes there's some genetics that we would like to prefer. And then we go through a pricing structure. And then if they're kind of all bought in at that point in time and we think there's a long-term commitment, then we move forward there. It's kind of a word of mouth.
The other thing I wanted to ask a little bit about, Phil, is trying to figure out your customers now and what they want in your product. How much feedback do you get from them about what they want from your product a lot of times?
The customers that are buying natural and organic probably want to have a lot of transparency where their meat comes from, where their food comes from. As we interact with them, we want to be able to satisfy their questions. I think in today's world, with those are more discerning consumers. And when they're more discerning and they start to see where their food comes from, they also like it to be delicious. And when you can give them good transparency and a delicious experience, it feeds on itself.
Phil, for doing this for so long, I'm just kind of curious from an R&D perspective, how do you guys come up with new products in order to keep things fresh a lot of times? Or is it about sticking with the tried and true, or how do you guys come up with new products now?
I think a lot of it's tried and true. I mean, the consumers like to venture out once in a while to different products. Majority of our volume is in old traditional products, probably how they are packaged. And a lot of times convenience will drive them into new areas.
Phil, I was interested. You mentioned some retail partners, but take me through how you guys go about picking your retail partners and what they need to do in order to establish whatever you want from True Story Foods.
Well, we go back to the natural food stores of probably 50 years ago. They were all small independents. Like I was saying, Whole Foods is probably the first large-scale specialty natural supermarket chain. And I think maybe since they've been established, probably the last 15 years, most of our products become more mainstream. You can almost find natural organic in almost any supermarket chain in the country. So we try to find, it's a lot easier to find chains now that are looking for that variety in the stores. And, so our distribution is pretty wide with almost every retailer.
And for your business of how to get distribution to those places, are you guys mainly using co-packers around the country? Take me through a little bit of that, of how you guys get the meat that you want, the facilities and process that it goes through there.
We're processing most of our products here today. We have a couple of co-packers that we've had old relationships with that make a couple of the products, and those are old relationships. But generally, there's only four or five co-packers that we use today. Primarily ourselves.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your facility there in California. What's the square footage and a little bit about that place?
See, here in California, we have around 80,000 feet. It's primarily producing hot dogs and sausage, sliced meats, and deli meats. It's a fairly new facility. We've been here for almost 20 years, so we're constantly upgrading it.
And tell me some of the things that you guys have had to do over the last few years with the facility and trying to figure out everything over the last 2 years of everything like that.
Well, COVID has been a challenge, I think, for everybody. So I think a lot more attention over the last couple of years has been through automation. So you got pack hot dogs. You just put a brand new automatic packaging machine in for slicing. There's upgrades to the machines that can go a lot faster. And that's where most of our attention has been.
Phil, the other thing I meant to touch on earlier was how you guys go about finding your certifications for non-GMO, organic. What is the process that you guys go through to make sure that all those boxes are checked?
Well, if we get into the organic, there's just an organic box. There's all the requirements to qualify for organic. And then we have the natural, which is ABF. And in that area there, we'll have humanely raised, which is important to everybody and to our brand. And some of those are humanely raised or the GAP certification. It depends on the protein, sometimes what certification. But you're always going to have organic is organic. There's no way around that. And they're pretty specific. They do their annual audits. And then we go to the antibiotic free and then the suppliers that are certified to do that. And humanely raised is always important.
And another note that was passed along to me was about the Kuro Buddha pork. How did you get into that? Has that always been something that's been around that you've looked at, or is it just been a new part of pork that you've wanted to expand a little more?
Kuro Buddha pork is a breed of pork. A lot of times it's referred to as Berkshire. We think that there's the heritage breeds of some animals. Specifically for us, and a lot of our products is the pork. I think it's an old traditional pork that goes way back. And that pork has usually got a nice deeper red color and has nice marbling. I think part of that is today consumers are not concerned with what they were 50 years ago at Tricina. So in today's world, you can take a nice pork chop, cook it to 145, it'll stay moist. And if you've got a nice piece of flavorful meat that comes from the color and the marbling and the breed, you'll have a tremendous experience.
Yeah, and I was wondering, you know, bringing in these or expanding more of these breeds and everything like that, how much was that figured out when you've done traveling yourself and seeing things in Europe, things around the world? Take me through a little bit about having all those experiences in order to kind of figure out what you want from the company.
We take a look at the pork side. Russ was always the leader. He had been a commodity producer, had some experiences and decided to go more the natural route. He's a geneticist. So at a certain time, he started to look at the breeds. And although there are certain breeds, there are different levels of that breed. And so we tried to, at least for ourselves, to go to the highest level. And at that point there, for pork, it's color and marbling. When you do that color and marbling, even when you eat our products, a lot of people will say, geez, this tastes a little bit different. I think in many cases, part of that is also in the fat. Because that fat is very sweet. And so I think the combination of the fat, the meat, and the marbling, it's a well-cooked pork chop is something I think is overlooked in many in the marketplace today. And a great opportunity for an option.
So Phil, just wrapping up here, I think we've hit on most of the topics. What's your steps moving forward with the company and what you're kind of looking at for the rest of this year and moving into next year?
I think we're evaluating sort of the 65 years that got us, and my partner's family, they've been around since for over 100 years. So when you put those kind of people in a room together, it's like, hey, what got us to where we are? Sometimes it's sort of, you're going backwards to go forwards, seeing what are the products we're making, and traditionally, how were they made? And maybe they've done a little creep over the years, and they're not as recognizable in flavor and texture as they were before. So we're wanting to make sure no matter where you go, when you taste our products, it's a great experience.
The last thing.
Go to the marketplace and figure out what that is. I mean, in many cases, you can go to Europe and eat some wonderful foods. A lot of the history of our products come from Europe. So we always try to drive to that standard of excellence.
Another thing I wanted to add, Phil, is I always try to gauge people. What do you enjoy so much about this this job, this profession, after doing it all these years?
What drives me, I think when I went to work, I was judged as I came through the management and leadership of the company on two things. It was always people and quality. You couldn't get one without the other. The quality was uncompromised, which meant you always had to try to improve it. This way here, there was constant improvement. And you had to take care of the people, which gets back to a question you had before that relates to good relationships. And between great people, driving quality, it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But it creates a great culture. I think when you can create a great culture, people feel it internally, your customers feel it, and your products show it.
Make sure to check out the latest stories from the monthly print edition and online at meatpoultry.com. Also follow us on social media at Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, all by searching at Meat Poultry. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us. All right, that's it for this time, folks. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.